Hello and welcome to another episode of Amon Sheeran's Pirate Radio. Today we have a very special guest, Jess Fresley. Jess, thank you for doing this. Thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
All right. So Jess and I met working at camp. She was known as the basketball instructor / boot camp Jess for a little bit, for working kids out hard, but getting the best out of them at the same time. So Jess, how did you first find the sport of basketball, and what made you fall in love with it?
So I grew up in a basketball family. So I grew up surrounded by coaches, a lot of basketball coaches. My dad and all my uncles played basketball. So I grew up going to men's college basketball games, Hofstra, Fordham, and then Quinnipiac games as well. So that's kind of how I got into it. The big joke was that if you're a Fresley and you don't play basketball, you're irrelevant. So so kind of everyone kind of played and coached basketball. And then I actually didn't get into playing competitively until I was in the eighth grade. So I danced for 5 years. Thank God I gave that up. And then I played softball competitively. And then I quit that, and then I ended up in basketball. So kind of made my love for the game stronger because I wasn't burnt out as a young kid.
Yeah, that makes sense. A lot of kids get into it too early and then end up leaving early at the same time. When did you ever have a game either in eighth grade or maybe early high school where you realized you were talented?
So I was actually one of these kids who was always underlooked. And so I was never a starter. I was never someone who was, oh, she's going to go D1 or she's going to get a scholarship. I was actually told the opposite. I was always told I was too short, too slow, not on the right team, couldn't make that team, couldn't make this team. So it was kind of the opposite, where I had really strong family support that always believed in me, which was huge. And I had one or two coaches here and there that believed in me. So it wasn't until I actually got a scholarship in the NE10. I was always told I couldn't play in the NE10. It wasn't good enough. But I could play in the ECC and I can play at the CAC. And so when I got an NE10, I had two NE10 offers. That's kind of when I realized, like, okay, all these people are wrong because somebody somewhere sees it. So.
And what made you believe in yourself facing those doubts when you were told you shouldn't be on this team or you shouldn't be on this team? What kept you going?
I would say I have really strong family support. Me and my dad would be really close. So my journey through my basketball career is just as important to him as it is to me. Mm-hmm. So everything I've been through, every success, it's kind of a we thing, and it's always been a we thing. So his belief in me, no matter what anyone ever said, definitely kept me going.
All right. So who do you look up to in the NBA and the WNBA? Who inspires you?
So I'm a huge Sabrina Ionescu fan. I think she's really great. And then I would say a huge Kobe Bryant fan. Just what he had spoken for and what he believed in, and his emphasis on empowering women and empowering girls in sport is huge into what I do now. So yeah, those would be two that come to mind.
All right, definitely. Yeah, a lot of people, when I ask a certain question at the end, they always say Kobe Bryant. I definitely heard that answer before, like the mama mentality and his work ethic was just, you know, unparalleled. So definitely two good choices. Then Ionescu, obviously a good choice. Liberty, she's kind of the face of the league right now. So so you said you had two offers in the NE10. Obviously, you ended up going to Southern Connecticut. Talk about your process to end up going there.
Yeah, so I had about five or six schools in the ECC. And then my coach at Southern Connecticut State, she was actually the coach at Molloy College in the ECC at the time. So I was being heavily recruited by her at Molloy. So she was the first college coach to ever offer me. I have known her since I was 15 years old. So she kind of saw something in me from the start when other coaches didn't. And then as recruiting process went on, I saw other schools, I saw other people, but she always kept in contact with me and made it very clear that she cared about me and wanted me with her. So I actually almost verbally committed to Molloy College. And then right before my freshman year, she said that she was leaving and going to Southern Connecticut State, and she was going to try and offer me there. And so I had another offer at St. Rose. So it was between St. Rose and Southern Connecticut State. And then she ended up offering me to Southern. And 6 years later.
There you go.
Yeah.
The rest is history. All right, cool. Yeah. You step on campus at Southern Connecticut State, aka SoCon, as a freshman. What is your thoughts like? Are you like, I can do this, I got this? Or are you more like,
I got it? Yeah, so the first 2 years were really tough. I didn't step on the court until I was a junior. And then, so my first year was tough. Preseason was tough. It's one of those things you question if you really want to do it or if you don't. Preseason is always hard, the work ethic that it takes. And there's people just bigger, stronger, faster, harder. We had really strong captains, so they were tough on us. Different than the world we live in today. Probably wouldn't go as well as it would back then. But yeah, so it was definitely tough. My second year, made it to the NCAA tournament. So I sat the bench. My role was different. My role was to make the people who were on the floor better. And that was my role. And I accepted that and ran with it. But again, it was definitely hard not to be on the court. But going to the NCAA tournament and the people who were older than me and on the court were some of my best friends. So you really can't complain in that sense.
Right.
Yeah. And then I went in my junior year, I played and then I tore my PCL. So I played 7 games. And then luckily I was able to get that year back. But yeah, the first 3 years were rocky for sure. So it was hard mentally and physically.
Mm-hmm. So your senior year, get on the court. What's that transition like from the bench to playing more of a significant role on the team?
Yeah, it's definitely a huge transition. I was lucky and my best friend had played 3 years prior. She's probably one of the best basketball players I have ever watched or played against. She was a nation's leading rebounder, an All-American. So having her by my side was definitely helpful. She always believed in me as well. So yeah, it was definitely a transition. That year was rough for us, record-wise, but we figured it out. And then we got a fifth year and a sixth year, and things were up from there for sure.
Nice. Okay. So your college career finishes. How do you make the decision to continue your career as a professional and go overseas?
So it's funny because like my pathway to get to senior year was not that it wasn't positive, but it wasn't as successful until my fifth year, I'd say. So the fact that I'm playing overseas is actually crazy to me. If you were to ask me 3 years ago, I wanted nothing to do with basketball. But then my fifth year, COVID hit. And when COVID hit, we had a really rough senior year, so my fourth year. And we had a culture issue on our team. And so we didn't do well, not because we didn't have the talent, but because we didn't have the people and the human beings to be successful. So we got rid of our entire team. And there was 5 of us left. And then COVID hit. So there's 5 of us and COVID and in any 10 team to build. So through all of COVID, we started mental performance coaching. And so we had a mental performance coach and we built a culture from the ground up. And I fell in love with that process.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell in love with building a culture and building a program and trying to create a legacy to leave behind. And that's where I fell in love with basketball again. So it wasn't rather what I was doing on the court. It was the other things that are part of being in athletics. So then COVID hit and we recruited really good human beings that were also good basketball players, maybe not the most talented ones we could get, but the combination of the two is better. And so then my sixth year, when we actually were able to play, we did really well. And we had this culture that is still there now. So I would say my sixth year and that culture.
Right. So connection kind of is bad, but if you can hear me, what's some of the skills you use from your mental performance coach today? We had a little connection issue, but we're back. I was asking Jess, what are some of the skills your mental performance coach taught you that you still use today?
Yeah, so mental performance coaching is something I actually find extremely important. And I preach them to my teammates and to my coaches now and last year. There's so many aspects to it. I think putting a positive spin on everything, understanding that your attitude, your mindset, your energy, your effort, knowing what you can control rather than what you can't, understanding that your reactions are under your control, but other people's reactions are not, or what they do is not under your control, but how you react is. How to communicate is a huge one that I've taken away. So I'm the first to say, okay, let's talk about it instead of let's not, and wait it out and see what happens. So there's so many aspects of it. I mean, book, I have like 7 mental performance books behind me. and I read them with my close knit group of people on my team. Now I am always sending them mental performance strategies and reminding them of what can make us stronger.
I'm going to put you on the spot. Is there like a quote that you would recommend or a book that you might recommend for people who want to get into that
side? Yeah. So last year I read The Mind Game. Mm-hmm. And that was a really good one. Right now I'm reading The Championship Mindset, and both of those have really short, but to the point chapters. Mm-hmm. So you're not reading and reading and reading. You're not absorbing, but you can actually read the title of the chapter and say, okay, this is something I'm interested in. And they have a lot of good stories in them as well. So they can take away from them. But John Gordon would be someone that you can look up, and he has a lot of books and a lot of resources as well.
Yeah. I definitely want to start bringing that to my team and my athletes, like the mindfulness and realizing that the mental game is half the battle, especially in running, you know, plays a big part.
Yeah, it is. People don't realize how much it matters, for sure.
Right. So I definitely wanted to talk about, I don't know what they call it, like your initiative or program, but I definitely want to talk about Write the Future because I find it very interesting and something that can be really helpful to a lot of young kids. So talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, so Write the Future kind of came about in my first year in Ireland. So myself and my head coach were running these camps, and we're like, we need some sort of name to put around it. And with some brainstorming and collaboratively, we came up with Write the Future, because our idea was that we were empowering young girls and their futures ahead. And so in Ireland specifically, the gender gap is even larger than it is in America. And the amount of girls that fall off athletically is even greater than it is in America. So to keep them in sport, but not to keep them in sport to be WNBA players, but to keep them in sport to be successful adults, individuals, is kind of our mission. And then also I say it's like a triangle tier. So we implement the mental performance coaching, and then with the basketball skills and drills and a lot of fun. And then also I have my inclusion team here, which is our special ed team at Port Leash. And so I want to start implementing that, because we don't unify sports as much as we do in America. And so I coach an under 12 girls team. So my initiative for this year, my plan is to buddy them up with my inclusion team and have more of an inclusion styled sessions. And so it's kind of this triangle, and we're trying to work through it and how it can be successful, but it's a start. So
yeah, no, definitely. I think that's a lot of good work. Thank you for leading that program. It's very easy to sit on the silos and say, this is wrong about women's sports, or this could be different, but it's a whole nother thing to be on the front lines helping out. So
I want to pause for a second. Yeah.
I was just commending Jess on her efforts with Write the Future, and yeah, keep up the good work. We'd love to see stuff like that here and overseas, because it all helps. So my big question, my last two signature questions that I ask all my guests. The first one being, if you could have dinner with any celebrity or athlete, who would it be and why?
So off the bat, I have to say Zach Bryan, just because he's my favorite musician. And I know he just blew up recently, but I'm an OG Zach Bryan fan. And I don't know if you've ever watched his Joe Rogan sit down.
I started it. I'm like an hour in.
Yeah, it's 3 hours long.
Yeah.
But he just seems like the coolest guy in the world, and I would love to sit around a fire with a beer and hang out with him.
No, yeah, I agree. He seems like a really cool guy, like down to earth. I always thought of country singers like, oh, super accent, like southern, whatever, but he doesn't really have too much of an accent. Like was drinking beer with Joe, just seems like a normal guy. So
Yeah.
I would have him high on my list too. So that's a great answer. What's your favorite Zach Bryan song?
Oof. Off the new album, Hey Driver.
Hey Driver. Okay, cool. Yeah. He seems like a great guy, and he was like in the Navy, all this cool stuff. It's like a
Yeah, that's cool. He got arrested 2 days ago, but we won't talk about
Oh yeah. No, we won't talk about that at all. I didn't even know that. All right. So, Real American Zach Bryan. On that note, what would you like your outro song to be?
Sorry, my what?
Your outro song? So like just a song
Yeah.
to play as the podcast fades out.
Oh, gotcha. I didn't know what that meant.
That's me.
I thought you spelled
Oh,
it
it's okay.
wrong.
So anything?
ooh. Revival, Zach Bryan.
Yep. I just posted that on my story the other day, so that's a great
Oh,
one.
best. You have to listen to the Revival live from All My Homies Hate Ticketmaster because that's how he plays it at every concert, and it's like electric.
All right. Revival live. All my homies say Ticketmaster. Thank you,
Yeah.
Jeff. Good luck this season. Keep us updated. Keep the Instagram updated and come back on anytime.
Thank you. I will do.